Hey, you guys, welcome back to Listen Bitch Presents Tell Me Why You're Special. This is the arena where we don't pretend life didn't break us. We talk about how we kept going after it did, because the truth is, some people go through things that change them forever. Loss, pain, moments you don't come back from the same. And the question isn't just how do you move on, it's how do you keep living when your heart's been shattered. And faith, it definitely hits different in those moments because it's not about feeling strong, it's about choosing to trust God when nothing feels okay. So today, I don't think it's going to be a very light conversation, but it's going to be a real one. Today's guest is Alma Thomas. She's a minister, a mother, and a woman who has walked through deep loss and still choosing to inspire others. Alma, thank you so much for coming into the hot seat. Tell us who you are, what do you do, and what makes you special?
Hey, thank you. First of all, for inviting me on your platform. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
A little bit about me. When I was working, I was a Head Start teacher teaching 3 to 5 year olds for 33 years. I just stopped after I had my stroke. I'm a author, a motivational speaker, a pastor. I'm working on my doctorate in ministry at the moment. And what makes me special is that I've had a lot of bad chapters in my life, but I refuse to close the book. I refuse not to open up to a fresh new page and start all over again. And if you notice, I'm laying down, and it's not because I took this interview lightly and I'm taking a light nap,
Oh
but
no.
I do these interviews from my bed so that I can inspire people that if I can go on, there's nothing special about me, that you can go on also.
Yeah.
I compare my life to that clown at the carnival. You know the clown? You throw the ball at it really hard and it falls all the way back. And just before you're about to jump up and down and claim the grand prize, that
Back
sucker
up.
bounces back up again. Well, that's what I do in life.
Yeah.
They put something in that clown to make it bounce back. Well, God has put something in me, which I call the bounce back spirit. Every time the curveball comes and knocks me all way almost out, and Satan is ready to claim victory, I bounce back up again.
Yeah. I love that, and I knew this was going to be an incredible story. You have Alma, you've experienced the kind of loss that most people can't imagine. So I want to go back to that part of, how losing your son changed you.
Losing my son changed me in many, many ways because I was attempting to be strong. Excuse me. What people said I was, oh, you're so strong. I don't know if I could ever go through that. And silently, I was dying inside. Spiritually, I was dying inside. And what made it so hard is because if you know anything about the African American community and church, mental health is taboo. It's
Okay.
if you slap some oil on you and you pray, everything is going to be all right. What happens in our house stays in our house. We don't talk to strangers and tell them our business. And you grow up with those stereotypes and those stigmas. And when you find yourself needing mental health, you
Yeah.
wonder what's wrong with you. Did I not pray hard enough? Did I not believe enough? Why am I still suffering? And I knew the stages of grief because I studied them in college. And when you read the book, everything is smooth and
Yeah.
goes in a nice line. Oh, first you're at denial, huh? Then
Yeah.
you're bargaining, then you're depressed, and finally you get to that acceptance page, and everything is supposed to be all right, because now you're not stagnant, and now you're at the end, so you think. And then when the next day from acceptance, okay, I have to accept this, I know that he's not coming back, and you would say, I'm going to accept this. And then when you wake up in the next morning and you're wondering, is this a nightmare?
Yeah.
Am I going to wake up from it? I couldn't have possibly just buried my 18-year-old son. And now you're wondering, what's wrong with you? You went through that nice straight line, and you're supposed to be okay now, but you're not okay.
No.
And you don't want to reach out, and you don't want to keep talking about it, because you're like, no, people in their mind, they might not say it to you. Or some people are bold. They say it to you, oh, you should be over that by now. And you're like, wow, like, he's not coming back. So
yeah.
How can I just get over it just like that? It's been 16 years.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, on, wait, let me. Last Friday was the 18th year, and usually, you know, towards the latter part of my grieving, it had gotten better. But I don't know, for some reason, I don't know if it's because my daughter is graduating and he won't be here to see his sister, following his footsteps, but it hit me very hard this year.
Yeah.
That, you know, I'll never get a chance to see him walk across the stage. I'll never be able to see him get married and all those things. So it hit me hard this year. But once I found out that I didn't go straight through a straight line, and I was not okay. And I remember one Sunday morning, I went to church, and I couldn't wait till the altar call. I couldn't wait till the preacher preached. I was like the woman with the issue of blood,
mm-hmm.
that had to get to Jesus. I had to get to the altar. I didn't care about protocol. I didn't care. I just wanted to get to the altar. And I remember crying out, God, I'm dirty, but I want to be clean. And I just don't know how, because I was having these thoughts. Like, people would say, at least he's in a better place. And in my mind, I would think, okay, let your little Johnny trade places with my
yeah.
son. And then tomorrow morning, you tell me if you think Johnny's in a better place.
Mm-hmm.
A better place for me right now is in his bedroom or at the dining room table. A better place is not somewhere where I'll never see him again.
Yeah.
And then people would tell me things like, my 75-year-old grandfather had a heart attack and he survived. And I'm thinking in my mind, like, why did I lose my son at just 18?
Yeah.
And your 75-year-old grandfather had lived his life. Why was he spared? And I know those was not good thoughts to
they're
have.
human.
Those,
Yeah, they're human thoughts, though.
right. And they're, you know, that they were eating me up inside, smiling on the outside, but dying on the inside. And I said, it's okay not to be okay. That right now at the moment, church is not helping me. Right now, getting prayed for is not helping me. I go in church and I come out oily with those same problems dying inside of me. And I went to the EAP program, which the mental health portion of my church, I mean, of my job. And we talked about the things that trigger me, things, ways that I could remember my son and turn my pain into passion. So one of the things that I did, which I have to get back to, excuse me, because I haven't done it since the stroke, is I started a scholarship in my son's honor, the Tyshawn Friends and Scholarship Fund. And to date, I've given out 17 scholarships to people who have been accepted to college, and they can buy their books or whatever they need with that money. So being able to recognize, like, one of my triggers was graduations.
Yeah.
And since all my friends had children in the same age group mm-hmm. as my son, we used to hang out together with our children all the time because we were all single parents, and we would do activities that included our children. So now, once my son was gone, I didn't feel part of that group anymore. And when I would go to their children's graduations, I would cry hysterically. And people looking at me like, she's very emotional about little Johnny graduating. But then I felt that that was a trigger, and that it was okay for me to say, no, you know, I'll send a gift, but I'm not coming because that triggers me.
Yeah.
So I changed because once I went through the loss of my son, everything else that I went through in life was easier for me because I had already experienced the worst thing in my life, and God had showed up. I didn't tell you this part of the story. My son was only 18, so I didn't have him and no insurance because you expect to you leave before your child.
Of course.
And he's so young, you don't think about that. And I had prayed and I said, God, just give me enough money to put him in the ground and I'll pay for the funeral for the rest of my life if I have to. And my friends got together and decided they didn't want me to have to go to the funeral home every 2 weeks and relive my son's death all over again, those emotions. Yes. So they started raising money. And in 2 days, they raised $10,000. Wow. That I had to tell them to stop collecting. The man at the funeral home took off every cost that he would have made. We only had to pay for things like the casket, excuse me, and opening up the grave. But everything he would have made, he waived it because people were calling him, telling him how amazing of a young man my son was. And I didn't know him at that point from a hole in the wall. But he did that for me, and the community did that for me. So that showed me that even in your worst times, when God says that he'll never leave you or forsake you, that's what he means. At the darkest moment of my life, God showed up and showed out.
Yeah.
So everything else was easier.
Yeah.
Because I felt like David. I remember David was anointed king, but it wasn't his time. And he went back out in the field. And while he was in the field, he killed the lion and a bear, and God was with him. So when it was time for him to fight the Philistine, he knew that he was going to be victorious because God had already shown up for him. So in all my other situations, I knew that I was going to be victorious because God had already showed up for me in the worst time of my life.
Yeah. And I love that you're sharing that part of the story, Alma, because at that point, I mean, you lose your son, and I think that it's human to even question him in your own soul, right? To be like, why did you take my son? I don't understand you. And you feel kind of disconnected. But at the same time, he's working behind the scenes to make sure that you're kind of taken care of. And you still had that space to, you know, even question, for faith to even just be like, oh, why? You know, like, why?
Right.
So I think that's amazing. You also, okay, so on top of this, you've had to reinvent yourself, because I think people don't understand when you lose someone that close to you, that it's not just that that person's gone, it's that you aren't who you are anymore. Like,
Right.
your part of your identity is gone, so you've had to reinvent yourself. You're doing this and you also survive a stroke. What has that journey been like physically and emotionally?
I had my stroke on April 23rd, 2021. And initially, when I had my stroke, they didn't think that I was gonna survive. They called my parents and my daughter and told them to come to the hospital if they wanted to see me alive. As a matter
Wow.
of fact, a nurse asked me, do I want her to hold my hand while I transition? And the funny, excuse me, the funny thing was, I didn't feel like I couldn't breathe. They're telling me that I was breathing at 4%. I didn't feel it. And usually, when you can't breathe, there's like a pressing on your chest. I didn't
Yeah.
feel any of that. And then I said, you know what? I have a good enough relationship, I feel, with God, that if He was going to take me, He would have gave me a sign like, this is over, say goodbye, whatever. But none of that happened. So I felt like God had me on His own ventilator, breathing the breath of life into me. And I said, I will live and not die. This is not unto death, because God didn't tell me that. So after that, I spent 2 years in the nursing home, which was the worst experience of my life. Side note, if anybody watching this episode, listening to this episode, has someone in the nursing home, make sure you check in on your family, because not everybody is there because they're nurturing and caring. A lot of people are there because they want to check. And many, many elderly people are being abused and misused, because I could talk and they were trying to neglect me and not take care of me. And I threw the jobs that they were being paid for. As a matter of fact, I was trying to get home for like 2 years, and they kept saying, you can't come home because you need 24-hour care. I'm like, I don't even get 24-hour care in
Yeah.
this nursing home. I
Yeah.
see somebody 3 times a day.
Yeah.
Whether them change me. And some days they don't even do that. I have to call and have my family call and my friends call to tell them to do their job. So that
Yeah.
was the worst experience of my life. That was my wilderness experience. I was like, God, why?
Yeah.
I'm so far away from home. I was 45 minutes away from home. My mom is elderly, so she couldn't make that drive, every day, every other day. And my daughter was in college, so she could come once a week and make sure I had everything. So it was lonely. And I asked God, I said, why do I feel all alone? Why? And he said to me, he was like, I had to put you here because you had to hear my voice. That I'm not saying what you were doing is wrong, but you were not doing what I wanted you to do. You
Yeah.
couldn't hear my voice because there were so many voices around you that you was listening to, that you couldn't hear me when I told you what I wanted you to do. So now I have you here by yourself, where all you can do is communicate with me and read your word and listen to worship music and get closer to me, have a relationship with me, not just a form of godliness, but a relationship.
Yeah. He does put us where he needs us to do his work, and can't always say that we're going to love the situation, but I feel like you've made the most of it. What did this stroke take from you physically? How has your life changed?
My right side is compromised. I can feed myself, but I need somebody to prepare it and cut it up for me. So like I said, up until I had the stroke, I was working with children and
Yeah.
active and going to church and going to church events, and a lot of most of that is stopped. Now the teaching and preaching that I do it from my bed on the phone. As I told you, I'm an author. So before the stroke, I wrote 2 books. After the stroke, I've written about, been a part of about 20 anthologies, and I've written 4 books.
Wow.
And what to me is so amazing is that when I use talk to type, it never says what I wanted to say. So I got frustrated. And then I said, you know, when I text, I use my left hand and one finger. That's how I'm going to continue writing my books.
Yeah.
So I wrote all of my books on one finger on my left hand.
Yeah.
I didn't give up.
Yeah.
I know that God had a plan and a purpose for my life, and it was not over. I realized that in the cemetery, there's a lot of dead dreams and visions, and I didn't want to die with my dream inside of me. And I try to go on at least 1 podcast a day, because if I can inspire one person not to give up, I can inspire one person to dare to dream again, then my life would not be in vain. I would be using what God has given me. See, what I learned after the stroke is that you have 2 choices. You can be bitter or you can be better. You have to learn to accept the things that you cannot change.
Yeah.
And embrace the things that you still have. The stroke, as bad as I have, a lot of people, cognitive and speech skills are affected. My cognitive was never affected, and my speech skills were the first to come back. You know why? Because God still wanted me to be able to give him glory. God still wanted me to be able to lift up his name.
Yeah.
And I'm reminded that 20 years ago, someone prophesied to me. They were like, you're not just going to be national, but you got to be international. Then all those things happened. I had a stroke. My building was condemned. I got married. And my husband was a substance abuser. So I had another Christian no-no. I got a divorce. After that, I had a stroke. And just a couple of months ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. But my voice, I said, God, you can take away my feet, my legs, but don't take away my voice, because I want to be able to give you glory. And so I was telling you about the prophecy. So all those things happened, and I put the prophecy on like the back burner. 2 years ago, my apostle, before he died, said, I'm going to call you ambassador, because you're just not national. You're going to be international. So now, at this point, I'm thinking, okay, God has promised me that he's going to heal me. So is he going to heal me? And then I'm going to be walking and able to go to these nations. How am I going to get to the nations?
Yeah.
Now, right here in this place where I am, the enemy has spoken to me many times and said, you might as well throw in the towel. You'll never teach again. You'll never preach again. You're worthless. You're used up. But right here in the place where the enemy told me it was over is where God has gotten his greatest use for me, because as I said, I'm working on my doctorate. I'm teaching Bible school once a week. I'm teaching Bible study once a week, and I'm speaking on these podcasts, conferences, and summits.
Yeah.
And I've spoken all over the world, right here from my bed.
Yeah.
I'm international from my bedroom. I've reached more people in this state than I ever did when I was walking. Look at God. Who wouldn't serve a God like that? That even in your darkest days, he shows up. No matter what condition you find yourself in, God can still use you. So why are people, I know people look at me and feel sorry for me. Oh, why is she still on the internet? Why is she still showing up like that? Why are you not showing up for God when you have two legs and two arms and you can walk and you can talk? Why are you not doing what God asked you to do? If I can still in this condition do what God has called me to do, you should be able to do it too.
Yeah. You have definitely captured the essence of what and who I want this show to represent, because there is someone listening that has listed every excuse in the book. And if you guys don't see this video on YouTube, I mean, Alma is literally in her hospital bed, you know, she's in bed and still showing up to do all these things. I think that's amazing. When you're called, and there's, I think, only one way through, and that's to go through it. Did you know the exact message he wanted you to steward, or do you just kind of figure it out as you go? What is it that he wants you to share with people the most?
He wants me to use what I've been through, because I'm a grief counselor, but how could I tell you that you can survive grief? And sometimes people just associate grief with the loss of a loved one. But you can have grief when you lose a relationship, when you lose a house, when you lose a part of your body. And I can speak on all those things because I've been through it. So God is using me as an example that you can make it too. That Job is no longer here, but I feel like Job sometimes, and I say, though you slay me, yet will I trust you. I feel like the three Hebrew boys, that even if you don't do it, God, I know that you're able, and I'm able to tell people, look at me, look at what I've been through, but I never gave up. And there's nothing special about me. There's nothing great about me. God chooses ordinary people to do extraordinary things. So don't never give up. Don't never give up on your dreams. No matter how many bad chapters you have, you never know what the next one will be, because God has a plan and a purpose for our life. And it doesn't always look like we want it to look. Like, I compare my life to the GPS system. You know, if you are going on a trip and you make a wrong turn, do you pull over on the side of the road and say, I'm not going anymore because I missed my turn. And I wanted to go down this road, but I refuse to go down this road. No, you put the address in the GPS system and it says, rerouting. And it reroutes you, and you get to your same destination just by a different way. That's how life is, that you might have planned one way. I'm going to go straight down this street and I'm going to make a left. But you miss the turn and God reroutes you and you get to your destination, but you just didn't take the road that you thought you were going to take.
Yeah. I mean, that's perfect. We're out of time here, and I don't think you could have left a greater message with people. How can people find your books, and where can they find you right now?
Right now, you can find me on Facebook, Alma Thomas, on Facebook.
Okay. Alma, this is the part of the show that I'm going to tell you what I think makes you special. And it's not just what you've been through. It's that you're still here. No matter what you have come through, no matter what you're facing, you're still speaking, you're still loving, and you're still choosing to give something to other people, even after everything you've lost. I think that you have incredible strength. It's not always easy to steward the mission that God has for us. It's not always easy to see what makes sense to him maybe doesn't make sense to us. It's not easy to put one foot in front of the other, even when the GPS is recalculating. Some people do get stuck. Some people stay on the side of that road, and you're not doing that. And I think the fact that you're influencing other people to go ahead and reroute is incredible. I think you're very blessed, and I think you're incredibly special. I love your journey. To everyone listening, some stories are not easy to hear, but they do matter because life isn't always fair. It isn't always kind, and sometimes it's going to take everything out of you. But even there, Alma's proving it. God is still present. He's there in the grief. He's there in the loss. He's there in the questions you don't have answers to. So I'm calling you guys to share your story. Your mess is your message. The pain, the grief, the parts of your story you wish didn't happen. That's where your impact lives. Alma has not become the victim. She has become a conqueror, and giving glory where glory is deserved is an incredible gift. If this episode touches you, please share it with someone who needs it. There is someone right now who thinks that their excuses are bigger than God, and that's just not true. If you're ever ready, you guys, I want you to get into the hot seat and come tell me why you're special. Alma, God bless your journey. You're amazing, and you're an inspiration. Basically everything I want the show to represent. So I appreciate your time today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me and allowing me to be transparent. To God be the glory.